Welcome to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm your host, Richard Nelson, here with State Senator Max Wise, Majority Leader of the Kentucky State Senate, and we're going to talk about the upcoming 2026 General Assembly session and some of the looming issues on the horizon. Max, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely, Rich. Thanks for the invitation.
Actually, thanks for having us, because we are in your office in Frankfort, and a beautiful office, by the way.
Thank you. My wife tells me not to let it go to my head, though, so I'm pretty grounded of where I'm at, but no, thanks. It's great to be in the position I'm in, and looking forward to this conversation today.
Yeah, well, thank you again for joining us. The goal of this program is for us to touch some of the high points, like I said, looming issues, big issues. We don't have a whole lot of time. It's less than a 30-minute program. But so I want to jump right in and start with really a big issue. You were at the Kentucky Voices for Health annual meeting. And you said that heading into 2026, there's an elephant in the room. And when I first saw that, I thought, was this a joke about Republicans? Of course, you got super majorities here in the Senate and in the House. But that's not the elephant in the room that you're talking about. But it's regarding Medicaid. And this is related to the big, beautiful bill that was passed earlier in the year. And prior to that passage of the bill, the federal portion for Medicaid was 90%. That shifts to the states. It's going to decrease. The federal portion is decreasing down to 71%, which means practically, and you know this, our listeners might not, that means that the state of Kentucky is going to have to come up with $1.4 billion more per year. Fortunately, there's a rainy day fund. You got some money there. But there are a lot of implications with this. So Max, one of the things you said at this conference is that we can look at being compassionate and also being responsible as we go forward in the Commonwealth as it relates to Medicaid. So how is it really possible to balance those two things? Because there are a lot of people, one-third of Kentuckians, one out of every three Kentuckians are dependent on Medicaid.
They are. And the thing about, Richard, I think we need to find out is, are those one-thirds truly deserving, or is there some statistics or some abuse that could be occurring with Medicaid? Yeah. You know, for those with disabilities, our elderly, our children, the most vulnerable, absolutely. Yeah. But if we've also got families with a combined income of over $100,000, yeah, and we're seeing Navigators and Escalades being driven by those that are on Medicaid, we need to have a serious look at the Medicaid program in and of itself. I mean, we did the same thing with pharmacy a few years ago with the Medicaid program and saw, you know, there was $600 to $700 million in Medicaid spending that was not being dispersed equally out to pharmacists. So I think we could do the same thing with doing maybe a Medicaid overhaul. And I do think, as I mentioned, responsibility and compassion can go together in this. We're not just simply wanting to kick people off to the curb on Medicaid, but at the same time, if we need to truly be looking at what was Medicaid intended for?
Yeah.
And that's what I think we need to get back to. And I think with the federal government pushing that back to the states, you're right. We'd heard of possibly it was going to be 65-35 match, which would be about $3 billion.
Yeah.
So it's going to be tough. I think there's still a lot of misinformation about some of the things out there. The sky's falling, 35 hospitals closing.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. Now, there's going to be some tightening of the belt, but I don't think we're going to see all of a sudden Kentucky shutting down 35 hospitals in the Commonwealth.
Max, you had talked about the original intention of Medicaid, and originally it was supposed to be a social safety net for those who didn't have access to health insurance, particularly, let's say, the single parent that had kids, and they were left out without anything. But there's been a move, essentially since the Affordable Care Act, to move more and more people into government subsidized health care. Now, it has taken the form of more people getting onto Medicaid. How can you, let's just drill down practically, the compassionate part with the practicality that you said that there's people who probably shouldn't be receiving it. There's a way to maybe narrow that down. But how do you transition people off in a way that their whole finances aren't going to collapse? And we're looking at state finances being in a bind, but what about the family who maybe they can't afford some kind of a private health insurance plan, but how do they transition off? Because I can just imagine the concern that they have right now.
Well, we get them moved to Bowling Green, Kentucky. There's a lot of jobs.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things happening right now in Kentucky. We're doing a lot of ribbon cuttings. I say Bowling Green and Warren County because we're seeing a whole influx of people moving there because of job opportunities. we need to also make a culture of a new generation that emphasizes work and emphasizes the accountability of wanting to work and the value of a paycheck. If there's somebody that's disabled, well, I'm not talking about that. I don't want anyone leaving here today thinking I'm talking about people with disabilities. But if someone is 25 years old and is living in a parent's basement right now saying, you know what, I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to draw. And not drawing by an artist's pen. It's drawing from the government. We have to stop that mentality. And there is a mentality in Kentucky that we're seeing that happen. We see a lot of kids that aren't doing summer jobs anymore. We're seeing the lack of accountability in some certain areas. It all starts at home, Richard. The government shouldn't be solving every one of these problems, but if we had family and a family structure back to where it used to be, I don't think we would have the problems that we're facing today. But the expansion of Obamacare, the overextending that we saw, what this played out, we simply have too many people on it. It's not sustainable. It's not.
Max, there's a human dignity component here that you just touched on. If you're able-bodied and can work and not working, it's not dignifying to be idle, to live in your parents' basement if you're in your 20s or 30s even. And we're seeing more and more, unfortunately, men find themselves in that situation. There was a move several years ago by former Governor Matt Bevin to get a waiver from the federal government to require work or education requirements. I think the legislatures dealt with this. There was a court ruling that said, no, you can't do that. Where is that right now? And essentially, to recap that, it said that anybody receiving Medicare that was able-bodied between the ages, I think, of 18 and maybe 59, if you weren't a primary caregiver, if you were not disabled, that you had to do to work or to go to school 20 hours a week.
Yep.
A judge struck that down. Where is that?
That's correct. I think you're going to see maybe some form of that being reintroduced, that we could try to do that again. Now, it may take the next governor of Kentucky, this current governor, I don't see, that will be supportive of that. But we created last session to go into this year in the interim, the MOAB, the Medicaid Oversight Advisory Board, which is going to make a continuation that'll go through the legislative session this year. They're bringing forth recommendations. Those are such recommendations that we're waiting to see. I know they just met this week. I don't yet know what the recommendations are, but I think they're going to look at Medicaid in a holistic view, and they have had a lot of testimony, a lot of people coming in. But I think what Governor Bevin was on that trajectory path, there was a lot of support for that. Unfortunately, as you know, like we've done with other things up here, we've not got a lot of things passed by the court system. So I think this will be one that we will continue to come back and look at.
Very good. Moving over to the next big issue that's been talked about quite a bit is that the state legislature, you and the Republican supermajority here, have set Kentucky on a course to eliminate the state income tax. In January, it is set to be reduced another half a percentage point. Right. It's going down to 3.5%. And the question is, though, can we continue on that path if we have to pick up the $1.4 billion to take care of the Medicaid obligation? Is that a possibility?
Yep. So we missed the trigger this year by 0.05%. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say the smart thing we did is making sure we had the triggers in place. We did not do what a Kansas did of a model such as that, is completely dropping it to zero. Yeah. We have two of the best minds in the legislature, in Chairman Chris McDaniel and Chairman Jason Petrie on the Appropriations and Revenue Committee. I have full faith that this session is going to be very tough as it relates around the budget. You know, I've had to get new sports coat, Richards, because every lobbyist comes to me and they keep tagging, we just need a little bit more. We just need this. Maybe not.
Yeah.
My kids also have a Santa Claus wish list, but unfortunately, they don't get everything that's on the list.
Yeah.
So this session, we have to be fiscally conservative again, like we have been, to making sure that we're looking at where this expense is coming with Medicaid, coming with SNAP and other things that are there, that we still are doing our due diligence. I love what we've done with the Budget Reserve Trust Fund. When I came in the legislature, I think that was around maybe $300,000.
Wow.
You're up looking now between $5 to $7 billion.
Yeah.
That's a testament to conservative Republicans taking over, as we've done since 2017, 2018, and have turned the state around. And I love that we've been conservative in the fiscal approach. Now, with that, there's going to be tough decisions. This is not going to be an easy budget at all, because there's going to be a lot of needs and a lot of wants.
Yeah.
But we've looked before in the past, we've done some one-time funding expenses and given some money out to some communities. We're always looking for skin in the game. We're also looking for return on investment.
Yeah.
And I think this session, we're going to have to do our due diligence to make sure if we are doing one-time expense projects, making sure we are getting that return on investment.
Max, I've talked with one legislator in the House who would like to reduce the amount. Right now, the way the reduction for the state income tax is, it's a half percentage point.
Correct.
And there are certain benchmarks that need to be met, as we just talked about. But there's somebody talking about, well, what if it's not a full half percent, but what if it's 0.25 and move it down that way? Is that on the table for this budget session?
We've had those discussions. So we've had even members of our caucus that have brought that up. And looking at if it's 0.25 or a tenth or whatever it could be, mm-hmm. we're open to that. We want to get to zero. Our goal is to get to zero. Mm-hmm. We also are looking at, is there other ways we can get to zero by looking at maybe sales tax? Just throwing that out there. There's all kinds of discussions. Everything starts in the House. We're dealing with revenue. And we are, I say we, Senate leadership and our Senate caucus are looking forward to seeing what the House brings us with this budget and what we're able to work off of.
Just one last thought that I want to put in the minds of our listeners. Half percentage point does not sound like a whole lot when you talk about how much fewer in taxes you're paying. But practically, as a whole, for each half percentage point in the income tax reduction, it puts over $700 million back into the pockets of Kentucky. I want to say it's like $729 million, something like that. It's a pretty big number.
It is.
And that's significant. That's more money for people to use to provide for their families, to maybe fill their own wish list that
Absolutely.
We were talking about. And the reason I bring that up is because there are different entities that come up here and they lobby you, and there are probably a lot of people working for good things, but they're saying, look, if you cut the state income tax, there's less money for this program or that program or this good thing. But it's really that pitted against individuals putting more money back into their pockets and making decisions for themselves, isn't it?
That is, absolutely. And you know, once again, if we're looking for lesser government and the free market, and allowing some things to occur and happen in this state, I think we're on the right path. I know we're on the right path. And I trust our budget experts that we have working for us. We have some of the best minds in LRC, our Legislative Research Commission, that are also economists that are helping us along the way, as well as other groups that are out there, you know, with the state.
Very good. Max, I want to move on to social issues. You had a press release back in June applauding a U.S. Supreme Court decision. It was a Scrimeti case where the state of Tennessee had their law that prohibited gender transition or hormone therapies for minors. You sponsored Senate Bill 150 a couple years ago, and essentially this Supreme Court ruling in Scrimeti upheld Kentucky's law as well. And this is what you said. You talked about common sense won the day. That's a little bit of a paraphrase, but you applauded that. Do you see any more gender ideology issues coming up? Look, Kentucky has been through the ringer when it came to transgender identified boys and girls sports teams. That was banned. When it came to, of course, the Senate Bill 150, the transition procedures. That bill also addressed the teaching mm-hmm. of gender ideology in public schools.
Correct.
Is there anything more that can be done or anything on the horizon related to this issue?
You know, there's always issues that pop up. There's always things even when we get during session. I mean, I think it was last session, we had an issue of someone dressed as drag in the state capitol where we had a state representative had to handle that situation. Yeah. That gentleman looked like he was a 6'5 defensive lineman.
Yeah.
That should not have been going into a women's restroom, especially on a day when children were in the Capitol that day for a visit on a site here.
What you're referring to, I had a chance to see that video. It went viral, and it was disturbing to see that. The guy looked like he was dressed in a tutu, and you're right, the Capitol was busy. Often school groups come up here, and there were young people there, but there was a legislator from Eastern Kentucky who saw it and said, hey, you're not going to go into the girls' bathroom. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those issues, Max, that I think that most of us wish that we weren't dealing with this. Like, what has happened where you and I grew up in an age where that was unthinkable?
Yep.
I think there's people a little older than us. We're getting old. But that would say, what universe am I in? But there has been pushback, not just in Kentucky, but across the country, all the way up to the presidential level, where there's been executive orders declaring that male and female are the only two recognized genders for federal purposes. a number of other things related to that as well. But yet, at the same time, we know that there are some schools, and here's where I'm going with this, some schools that have defied Senate Bill 150 Absolutely. Publicly and openly. Jefferson County Public Schools is one. And what kind of discussion is related to that? You are the lawmaking body for Kentucky. You write budgets for education as well. And you have an entity that's in defiance. What does that look like? I wish I could be a fly on the wall in those conversations.
I will say there's 171 school districts. I'd say probably 170 are complying with a lot of stuff that we do here. But we have one that does not. You're referencing Jefferson County Public School, and it's not just that issue. Look at our school resource officers. Look at the stuff we've done for school safety. There's been so many things we've passed as a legislative body, but once again, we're also facing a court system that's also not doing anything on the same token when we see these situations happen in Jefferson County Public Schools. So I hope also, working with our Attorney General, if there are some things that are not working there, that we can handle that. We may be looking at some legislation this session that deals with school boards, especially targeting some of our most popular school boards. You look right now at finances of Jefferson County and Fayette County school districts, they're in a bad shape. If I'm a taxpayer and I'm living in those two counties, I would be absolutely embarrassed and enraged. They're not able to balance their budgets. And we're seeing extravagant expenses on trips to Australia by the Fayette County School District. How's that benefiting a student? How's that benefiting a teacher? So I think this session, you're going to see us as it relates to some of those things to continue to go down that path. And here's the sad thing, Richard. Most of our school districts are not doing some of these things. They're following the law. They're doing the things that we're asking them to do. We also passed a bill of we put In God We Trust back in school districts. Have you seen that in Jefferson County schools? Probably not. Guarantee you see it in Monroe County. You'll see it in Metcalf and Taylor County. But at the same time, some schools are just so different than what other schools are doing.
There's two things that come to mind with Jefferson County. One is that Jefferson County Public Schools has a DEI department. I think it's under a different name, but essentially it's DEI policies. Multi-millions of dollars are allocated to this. I've had a chance to look at their glossy, I think it's a bi-monthly magazine. Yep. And there's a podcast that the director of DEI has, but they're doubling down on pushing DEI. Now, the state legislature last session banned DEI in higher ed.
Yep.
Is there an effort afoot or discussions to address DEI in K through 12 public schools?
Well, it sure was in the news just in the last 24 hours. Senator Lindsay Tishner has announced in the Education Committee that she does plan to file a bill that relates to anti-DEI in K through 12 schools. Every legislator has the right to file whatever bill they wish to file. When we did the post-secondary, we worked with the House on that bill that they brought forth to us. I think we've seen a lot of post-secondary right now. Actually, it's made some significant changes on college campuses. You never know the momentum of a bill of where it's filed the day one to where we are by day 60. But I will say that in that committee, it got a lot of coverage because of a Jefferson County Democrat who started talking about the need that white privilege has, and we need to make sure that all students are equal. We've got Elon Musk now involved in this. And so what happened in that, I think, is only going to make this conversation continue to go even further.
Yeah. And just to underscore an important point about DEI, one of the underlying principle or mentality is that you have what you said, there's white privilege. And that is inherently racism. When you use a color or an ethnicity to describe something or part of a description, that's inherently racist.
Absolutely.
And this is one of the concerns that you've had. We've had private conversations about this, and other legislators have, that there should not be racism or racist ideas that are taught on the public's dime. That's part of it. There's much more, but that is an important principle, part of the conversation.
And Richard, if you go back, remember the bill that I had, the Teaching American Principles Act, of making sure we have core documents that are being utilized in the classroom instead of a teacher finding something off the Atlantic or some type of website and using that as a document to teach off of. Go back to the basics of our country. Yeah. And even with the passing of that bill, I cannot tell you how many history teachers have contacted me saying, thank you. They are now able to utilize some things in today's time of going back to the Mayflower Compact and some other things that we did with that.
That's great. That's great. Good work on that, by the way.
Thank you.
I think we did a program on that.
We sure did.
I want to move ahead to, since we're talking about young people and children, Australia last week banned kids under the age of 16 from using social media. They can't get on Facebook or Twitter or TikTok. It's all banned. Had a chance to watch a story about that. Now, we've seen attempts in other states to do the same. There's a question of legality, First Amendment issues. I think there's one case that may still be tied up in court. The reason why this is an issue is because we know that social media has an unhealthy impact on our young people. Jonathan Haidt came out with a book called The Anxious Generation, and it's startling, some of the things that he is revealing in that book. Is there a discussion in our state legislature, Max, to restrict, really protect, maybe that's a better term. Yep. Young people are still developing. They're vulnerable. They're vulnerable to bullying, to shaming. They're child predators all over.
Absolutely.
Had an interview with somebody who has a child, a trafficking ministry, and she was telling me that the most dangerous place for young people today is on the internet, and it's on social media. This is where you have child traffickers lurking. Yep. So are there discussions here in the legislature to protect Kentucky's children from social media harms?
If you look at our past, and I say we, since the Republican supermajority is taking control of both chambers, you've seen more protection of children with legislation than probably any other time in Kentucky history. Mm-hmm. I think there will be something. I don't know what it is. As President Stivers always says, cousin, it looks like this. Yeah. What is it? But what we saw last session with Representative Josh Bray's bill on banning cell phones in the instructional time of classrooms, that has been phenomenal to the start of the school year. I cannot tell you how many parents and teachers and administrators have said this is helping with school discipline, student behavior, and the learning environment. I'm all about, I don't know what it will be, but also we had an artificial intelligence AI task force.
Tell us about that a little bit.
I was not on that task force. I really can't tell you as much as probably Senator Amanda Bledsoe could tell you, but I know one of the things in that is about the dangers of social media and children. So exactly what you're talking about. But I'll tell you what I'm concerned with also as a legislator, deep fakes. Mm. Of all of a sudden, we have this conversation right here, Richard, and it gets filmed. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, me and you were saying things that we're not even saying verbally, but it's something that's been a voiceover. That's scary.
Does that keep you? I had a chance to ask one of your colleagues that same thing. Right. With the capability of AI and the technology that's out there, the different programs and apps, and actually I'm learning this from a person who's working with Commonwealth Policy Center. He had shared with me, Max, the ability to go into previous videos I've done, commentaries I've done. He can capture my voice, get the entire vocabulary, every word that I've ever said over the last 15 years that I've been doing these kind of things, capture video and make me say things that I've not said. Yeah. Does that keep you up at night as a legislator?
I think it should keep every American up at night. Yeah. You know, here's the sad thing is I've got my parents who both have a Facebook account. They're in their mid-70s. Mm-hmm. They'll send me stuff all the time saying, is this true? Is this misinformation?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if they were to see me behind a podium doing a press conference and all of a sudden it's coming out with me saying bombastic expletive words, people will be like, what is Max doing? Some people just don't know the reality and understand what is fiction and what's truth. And this is worrisome.
Max, are there prohibitions against that right now? Misrepresenting somebody, public figure, anybody really, and making them appear to say something that they haven't? Are there any consequences for that in state law?
We need to have U.S. Congress involved in that. Because this is something you're dealing with the internet, crossing state lines, open communication. I don't know yet what the AI task force is coming out with. If that's one of the avenues we need to go down, I fully support it, because this is the worry about the future, is the technology abuse, and it's scary what could happen.
When you talk about somebody's reputation, especially a leader and somebody who's influential, you could ruin somebody's reputation overnight if that's not addressed.
Or you could also cause country versus country. You think about this of being national leaders of one country and someone seeing a video and they're saying one thing and they're a president of one country, and all of a sudden you can have a proxy war on your hands of seeing what is truth and what's not reality.
Yeah. A lot of implications with the development of AI, and we will be watching that and praying for you as you deal with that difficult issue. As we're talking about this, another development on the internet, didn't plan to bring this up, and you don't have to respond if you don't want to, but AI-generated images of people as we're talking, but related to pornography in particular. And this is a, I would say my perspective is that there's an epidemic of pornography, but there's discussion of AI-generated pornography and how that's regulated right now. There are regulations and restrictions and protections for minors. Kentucky, right. by the way, last year, 2 years ago, banned or required age verification.
Absolutely.
For pornographic websites. And as a result, Pornhub left. Some are saying, well, with AI-generated pornography, maybe it's not real pornography. I'm putting that out there for you to, that might be an issue that, that comes up.
Absolutely.
And I'm kind of thinking out loud with you, but I want to move to, we're running out of time here. There has been an issue introduced in the General Assembly last two or three sessions, maybe longer, I think it's longer. It's reforming the pardon power of Kentucky's governor. Your colleague, Senator Chris McDaniel, has championed this in the past. I've talked with him about this. He plans to introduce it again. And this comes into focus again because of maybe some pardons at the federal level. What are the chances of this of passing this session? And again, this is a bill that would restrict the pardon power within so many days of a primary election. I think maybe 60 days of the general election prior to that. And then I think even after that. And it's where there's some accountability mechanism that's put in there.
Yep.
Where are we with that?
You know, persistence wears down resistance. I'm hoping that Senator McDaniel continues to be persistent. I think it's a fantastic piece of policy. Mm-hmm. I've always supported it. We've always passed it off the Senate floor. We've got it over to the House. Mm-hmm. Anytime you're dealing with constitutional amendments, they're tough because you may have one that's going to be filed on the Homestead Act that deals with those at age 65 and older as it relates to property taxes. So, you know, they're, every member has the opportunity they want to file whatever piece of legislation.
Yeah.
But dealing with pardons, I think you'd even have a large percentage of our Commonwealth saying, should the governor even have the power to pardon?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that could go with this, but I support what Senator McDaniel's been doing.
Very good. Max, is there, we got 30 seconds. Any last words before we wrap this up?
You know, as we go into this session, we ask for prayers. We always do. You know, when you get to about day 48 or 50 of a 60-day session, it's tough.
Yeah.
We have a lot of decisions made and a lot of those that are affecting everybody in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. We're in a new chamber this year. We're not in the Capitol. It's going to be different.
So no public access.
No public access.
There.
There's going to be a viewing room that they can come to. The annex is still open. Come visit your legislator. But the next 4 years, possibly five, who knows how much longer, Richard.
Yeah.
But we know for sure 4 years, it's going to be different around here of not being across the street.
Yeah, very good. Well, Max Wise, thank you so much for joining us on the Commonwealth Matters. Best wishes to you in the upcoming General Assembly session.
Thank you, my friend. Okay.